Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, or whatever time it is in your part of the world. Welcome to Moon, Moo, and You, the Collective Wisdom. The call-in number this evening is 347-205-9200. Our guest this evening is Velma Gallant, otherwise known as the Queen of Joy. Velma is a testament of someone who has gone through some rough times in her life, and has overcome these adversities triumphantly. She has a passion for teaching others how to do the same in their own lives, and this is what we will be discussing on tonight's show. So before I bring on Velma to the program, I want to introduce this evening Moonvine, a.k.a. Joan Adams. Good evening, Joan.
Good evening, Kate. How are you?
Wonderful. How are the thunderstorms in your part of the world?
So far, they are leaving us alone, so I'm delighted. we had warnings earlier, so I'm glad they haven't hit us yet. And excited tonight, too. This is going to be great.
I totally agree. So I will bring on Velma. Velma Gallant, otherwise known as the Queen of Joy. Hello. Velma.
Hi.
Hello. Hi. How are you?
I'm great. Now I know I dialed in right.
Oh, you did great. You totally did. You were all here 5 minutes before the program even began. That's even hilarious.
Enthusiastic.
Yeah, we're ready to plurk.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, as I was reading your book today, I thought specifically of you, Joan, because you know, the whole thing of goals and of course the book I'm referring to is Queen of Joy's Juicy Bits of Change, Joy Through Change, Create Balance and Joy Through Change. And Joan is huge on goal setting, huge. And I'm pretty big on it too. And the whole idea of just, you know, having a tool chest and spiritual tool chest where you really work it so that you are in a state of joy. And so that's what I think that, you know, in a nutshell, that you your message is that right, Velma?
Well, what I've learned over the years is that I really did have control over my joy, even though I didn't think I did.
Yeah.
And I found that once I put a few tools into my toolkit, it made it a whole lot easier for me to get to that place, because there's so many things that we go through in life that, and quite often they get right in your face. I don't know if you guys have had that, where the ones that are staring you in the face and you can't see anything else.
Right.
And those are the ones that especially a lot of people right now are bumping into. And when you have stuff in your face and it's right there, it is difficult to look away and look at something else.
Right.
And so that's where the tools come in, because that's what supports you. If you are driving from point A to point B, having a car or a bike or something like that gets you there a lot quicker and a lot easier. If you're changing the taps in your bathroom, having the tools to do it is going to make it a whole lot easier, get done quicker, and you're going to do a better job. So
right.
It's kind of the same concept.
Right.
It's good to have your eye on those tools, I would think.
Well, it makes it a whole lot easier because, I mean, we've all heard it, you know, don't think of the pink elephant or don't think about peanut butter. And that's the first thing that you think about. So if I've got a crisis and I'm not supposed to think about it. I'm supposed to focus on something else. Your crisis is right there in your face. It's hard to turn your face away. But if you have something that is going to support you to do that, then, you know, you're going to be able to shift your vibration. You're going to be able to shift your focus just that much easier. And even if it is for just short periods of time, those short periods of time make a difference.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's so easy to dig yourself into a hole if you don't get out of it real quick.
Yeah, you don't
need find tools
for
a
that.
Way out.
Huh? You don't need tools for that.
I know. But you have to have tools to get out real
That's
quick
great.
Before you end up in that hole.
Does a shovel come to mind?
A shovel is a good thing. I love the whole thing about the dump and flip. And Amanda was talking to us about something a couple of weeks ago about the same type thing. I'd love to hear you talk about that some.
Well, the dump and flip is a tool that I created. Gosh, that was about almost 5 years ago now. And the reason I created it was because I had a lot of that in-your-face experience. We were had the risk of losing our home, and my son was about 3 years old at the time. So the idea of not being able to provide for my son was really quite devastating, and it was very much in my face. I thought I had no control over this situation. I'd been studying law of attraction and teaching about law of attraction, and here I was in this situation. And I needed something to shift my focus quickly and easily. And that's kind of where this came from. It was a blending of all the stuff that I'd been learning into one quick and easy thing, and that blossomed further into the journaling that I teach about. And all it really is the simple basic form is take a piece of paper and you fold it in half, and you end up with two sides of your paper. You get your left side and the right side, of course. And on the left side, you dump out all the crap, whatever that's in your face, whatever's scaring you, upsetting you, whatever you're worrying about, that kind of stuff, you dump it out on the left side of the paper, and you have to dump it. You cannot pretend that this stuff does not exist, because if you do that, you're stuffing it down, and it's going to manifest itself somewhere else in your body, you know, ulcers, digestive problems, cancer, heart problems, lung problems, any of those things. It's going to manifest somewhere else. So you have to get rid of it. And so you dump it out onto this piece of paper. And one of the ones at that time when I created this tool for me was the creditors called and I didn't have a good answer for them. My husband was a silent partner in a business. It wasn't working. And the only one of the partners that had assets was my husband, and that was our home. So, and I got the joyful, fun task of dealing with the creditors. So when I'd get those calls, I mean, I'd feel like crap, and I was upset, and, you know, it triggers that mama bear feeling because, you know, the safety of my son is being compromised. Mm-hmm. And so I'd pull out... what I used is one of those steno journals, the one that's got a red line down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And
I live
that
with
was
one.
It was just the perfect tool for it. So you dump out all the stuff on the left, and then on the right side, you take each and every one of those dumps, and you give it a 180 flip. So dump and flip. And what you end up with on the right side is a vision. You're using what's not working as a tool to create your vision. So, example, creditors called to me and didn't have a good answer for them. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
And the flip of that was, and this was the one that I used, was I contacted the creditors today and we celebrated that we're all paid up to date. And I got that vision 4 months later. Within four
wow.
months, my husband and the one remaining partner had all of the creditors paid up to date, and they were both taking a full-time income again. Because my husband had to leave his job to help take over this business and bring it back up to where it belonged. It was either, you know, it was a sink or swim situation. So
like
you,
a, yeah.
you see why it was pretty freaky and in the face,
yeah.
right? So
totally.
That's what you end up with on the right-hand side is your vision. Now, this last part of this is really, really important. Take that piece of paper and rip it in half. Because what I want you to do is I want you to get rid of what's not working. And it's a bit symbolic, but it's I'm dumping it out, and now I'm getting rid of it. It's not mine anymore. This vision is mine. So you take that left side, and you can burn it, you can rip it up, you can flush it down the toilet, compost it, whatever you need to do to get rid of it. I like the idea of composting it, because then you're turning it into something else good for the earth.
Yes.
So you're transforming it. So that's basically what you're doing. You're dumping, flipping it into a vision, and releasing the dump and hanging on to the vision. And it's an as-needed tool. So, you know, there were some days I would use it 3 and 4 times in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd get a couple of days reprieve, and I wouldn't need it because I'd be having some good days. So it's an as-needed tool. If you got something jumping in your face, stop what you're doing, take 5 minutes, do the dump and flip, and then get back on with your day. And if you use the steno pads, it's really great because you can keep all your visions
mm-hmm.
together in
yeah.
there.
Yeah, having the visions is what helps because sometimes I don't know, I can't decide how to visualize something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do I want my mental picture to be here? And that really helps. So you don't say 5 minutes a day. You're saying as needed.
For this tool, it's as needed. The journaling audio that I have out, that is just a 5-minute tool, and you can use it daily. And you can use the dump and flip inside your journal. If you're going to use the dump and flip in your journal, then have a spare sheet of paper to do your dump on.
Mm-hmm.
And then do the flip in your journal so you can keep it.
Right. That's wonderful.
Well, you can put it into that box you were talking about in your book, too. Put all the visions in a vision box. And,
absolutely.
And then you can go in there to reprieve them or whatever, and use them as needed.
Well,
kind
some things
like
are kind of fun to flip through after the fact and see
yeah.
which of these things you've shifted.
Like a prayer box.
A prayer box, absolutely. You know, that's the beauty of it. There's so many ways you can tweak these tools to make them your own. So, for example, you know, we've heard of vision boards, vision box, vision book.
Right.
I had one client that would scrapbook her visions
because
she loved scrapbooking, so that's what she
mm-hmm.
would do is scrapbook her visions. I actually have a vision wall. My vision board was too small, so I have a whole wall now. Things like that. Some people, you know, will make a collage and put it on their desktop of their computer. Like, it's really, you can personalize it and have a little bit of fun with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Joan has a book that she has created called The 10x10. And, you know, she gives that away for free. And I think that this all fits in very well with that, except I guess it was the ending of that was the year 2010, and now I think we have to move on to the year 2012.
Right.
So.
It is now being revised at the moment. It's going to have to become the 10x12 for sure, but it was basically that same thing. It's a goal, you know, it's 10 goals and 10 pages that you create vision boards in a book is what it amounts to.
Wow.
And the goals. It's really kind of fun. And but, yes, it is under revision at the moment because it was for the year 2010, leading up to 2010. So it does have to be updated. But, yes, that whole the vision board thing is, I think, one of the neatest tools I've ever learned. I just love that. I like to create them. And like I said earlier, we're talking about the dump and flip. It's coming up with the vision. It's coming up with that end result. What is the end result? What do I want from this? What do I want the end result to be? I was laughing where you said something about telling your mom your plans, and now you say your intention. It's focusing on that end result. What do I want?
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
And what makes you feel good?
Yes, and have the emotion with it, right? got to have that emotion.
The emotion is the juice.
Excuse me? The emotion is the juice?
Absolutely.
Got it.
Okay. That's
absolutely
cool.
Like
that's plugging into the high power. With that, like you're going from, you know, like the microscope to the Mac Daddy of telescopes when you do that.
Okay,
well,
so you're looking at. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So you're looking at a vision board,
mm-hmm.
and you are feeling how you would feel, how you will feel when that is done.
Right.
And you smell it, taste it, pull in all the senses, right?
Yes.
And hear the conversation.
Absolutely. Like you basically, or one of my coaches used to say, you technicolor vision it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make it like. Future project yourself in there, like you're right in there. What are you going to smell? What are you feeling? Especially,
mm-hmm.
what are you feeling? Are there things you can touch? Is there a taste in the air? Like, I know for me, I love Hawaii. So the taste in the air is that salty sea air,
mm-hmm.
and the fragrance of it, the smell of wet sand.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you can get
right in there.
Mm-hmm. One night on Second Life, Kate and Beck got me, and I was talking about, I was creating a vision board for my house at the beach that I'm going to have.
Mm-hmm.
And they pushed me. Kate, do you remember that? And
I do.
Pushed me and pushed me and pushed me for details. And then what are you going to do? And then what are you going to do? And then, you know, what does your day look like? And really pushed it to the point that now when I look at that picture, I have it. I know it's mine.
That's
yeah.
great, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah, that was a cool exercise. It really was.
Not to mention that, in my opinion, Second Life is one of the most amazing visualization tools also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're projecting this little thing that walks across the screen, and then, you know, it's a representation of yourself, and you can make it into anything you want it to be, And then you can discuss with your friends whom you wouldn't normally ever see or ever meet. And they all sit together and discuss a vision about where you want your house to be, you know, and exactly what the house looks like and all that great stuff. That was, yeah,
well,
it's a very powerful, very powerful.
You're changing what is in your brain, actually. You know, the New York Times, I think it was, published an article about people who were unable to walk and were on Second Life, and because they were walking on Second Life, they soon became able to walk in real life. It changes the brain signals. You know, you literally have changes within your brain when you are participating in that.
Yeah, you know, I actually did an interview with a woman with multiple sclerosis who has a pretty popular, disco joint on Second Life, and I didn't ever publish it or print it because I didn't feel that, you know, she really wanted me to, but we had a very intense discussion, and she is just homebound and hardly gets out, and this is her whatever real life, and then she gets on the Second Life and she has this really robust existence, and she feels that she's getting better, and she describes how day by day she feels like, you know, the illness is going into remission. I haven't spoke to her for over a year and a half, so I'm not really sure how it is now. But I just thought, oh, and she was one of the people who was quoted in the New York Times article, so I went out looking for her, and that's how I got through the interview, you know. And really, really interesting.
It'd be fun to see an update on that, Kate.
Yeah, I think I will. I could have to go on Second Life to do it, but what the heck? It sounds like worth the effort, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They've actually done a lot of research on this. They've, like with athletes, for example, basketball, they've got a test group that doesn't do anything with respect to basketball. They've got a test group that physically practices basketball, and they've got a test group that visualizes practicing basketball. And they, at the beginning, they would each shoot a number of hoops, and then they would shoot hoops at the end of the period of time. The test group that did not do anything stayed relatively the same. The test group that physically practiced increased, and the test group that visualized also increased, not to the extent of the ones that physically practiced it, but they did increase it
mm-hmm.
simply by visualizing.
Right.
And what we're really discussing here, and what you just say in your book, Velma, is that we're strengthening the magnetic pull. You know, the magnetic pull to getting exactly what it is that you not only want, but it's to create your own destiny in this world, what it is that we're here for.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and I've found that too. One of the things that I have really noticed over the years is that I am always cared for, even in those moments that I didn't think that I was. Because those experiences that I had back in 2004 are part of what has led me up to the journey where I am at now. I wouldn't be where I am at now had I not had those experiences. I wouldn't be, you know, building my own business full-time. I was at a full-time job building my business and raising my family. And now I'm raising my family and building my business, and that's it. I don't have the job and all of that extra stuff on top of it. It shifted my attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It shifted my perception. It prepared me in that my confidence levels go up. So those places where I think I see me, I'm being gently bridged forward on a regular and ongoing basis to that location, to that destination.
Well, and your credibility is more because you've experienced it, too.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not just regurgitating what somebody else taught me.
Right.
Right.
Makes a big difference.
Walking the walk or walking the talk, you know, the whole
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
And people know that, and that's why you are doing so well. Well, can you tell us exactly what your next step is and what it is that you're doing now?
Oh, I am, well, I filled my plate up really good again. I'm in the process of bringing together everything that I need for a community coaching program. I've opened the doors to it, and I'm adding to it and growing it on an ongoing basis, and that community coaching program is called Joy Made Easy. JoyMadeEasy.com, and that is just $30 a month for that. It is a community coaching program, so there's a private community, very safe and loving environment for people to come in and get coaching in there. There's also teleclasses with respect to that. Once a month we come together, do a little bit of coaching over the phone, answer some questions and answers. There's a private location for you to be able to submit your questions anonymously, because sometimes we have those questions that we're not really comfortable sharing in an open forum.
Mm-hmm.
So we can put those questions. You can put those questions forward privately, and then I'll answer them in the monthly teleclasses. They're going to be recorded. They're going to be available for downloading for everybody that's in the community. I also have a seminar coming up August 8th and 9th in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and that is called Joytastic Women, Joytastic Women with an E, .com. And the T-shirts are ready.
Oh,
that
that's
counts.
Great. That
the website,
great.
The website's up, but it's I got to put a form in there so that people can get information on when it's ready and everything like that, because I'm outlining some of the speakers. I've got the location already in place. The event is actually going to be supporting a nonprofit organization called Providence Children, Providence Children.com. And what that is it's a nonprofit organization in Calgary that supports families with preparing their special needs children to be brought into the regular school system. So autistic children, physically challenged children, that kind of thing. And just an amazing, amazing organization. So I'm really excited to be able to support them.
Wonderful. That is wonderful. And they're probably very appreciative that you're involved with them.
Well, and I'm hoping I can really rock and roll and, you know, just really give them some excellent support. I mean, 10% of all the profit from the website itself is going towards them. So the T-shirt sales, all of that kind of stuff, there's a portion of profit that goes towards the Providence Children's. So you buy a T-shirt, and 10% of the profit will go towards them.
That's
wonderful.
If you will, check the chat room right quick, Belle, and be sure I have posted those sites correctly.
You did an awesome job.
Oh, good. Good. We do like to be right, don't we? Because people need to know how to find you. You know how to find these sites.
That's right. That's right. Well, it sounds, reading the book, one of the things you did mention was the New Year's resolutions, and I wanted to just mention that the moon, Mu, and you is the direct result of New Year's resolutions, of our New Year's resolution, basically. I think we both sort of thought about it at the same time. And, you know, within a few short months, we had it going. I think New Year's resolutions are very, very underrated.
Well, I think you know, it could almost be better to call them New Year's evolutions.
Oh, mm-hmm. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really, sometimes we pick things that we don't really want. That's what we're supposed to want.
Yeah.
It's a matter of being open, though, don't you think? I mean, I think that time of year, I know I do, I'm a bit more open. You know, where am I supposed to go this year? What am I, you know, what do I feel led to do this year? It's an openness that you probably don't have the rest of the year as much.
Well, I think people toy with the ideas. And again, that's why I say, see, if you come from the perspective that you are, what would I like to do this year? What would feel good for me to do? That's a beautiful direction to go. The problem that I have noticed with some people is that, like I say, they pick the things that they think they should. I should quit smoking, so I'm going to put that on the New Year's resolution. I should lose weight, so I'm going to put that on there for my New Year's resolution. And when you come from that place of what I should do, you don't have the juice to get you through it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're shooting on yourself.
That's right.
There is a question in the chat room from Tam. I know you know her from the Meligro World Forum.
Yes.
Pat O'Brien's forum. And she has a question. She would like you to talk about plurking.
Oh, I love plurking. I love plurking. Play plus work equals plurk. I never work. Never,
oh.
Never, 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 never. Work is
yeah.
a four-letter word.
That's great.
So I changed it. I add play to everything that I do, and it shifts it. It automatically shifts it. If I have a task that I'm not really looking forward to, I do. I ask myself the question, how can I add play to this? How can I make this more fun for me? Sometimes it's as simple as adding a celebration at the end.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I can do interval celebrations.
Yes.
Yay,
right,
I'm a quarter
right.
done. You know, whatever it takes to get you through those things and make it a little bit fun, shift the focus on it. And if it feels better to be sitting on your deck with your laptop than at your computer, then do that. If it feels better to be, if you have audios that you need to listen to study for whatever it is that you're studying, go for a walk with it. Go for a bike ride. Go play in the park. Something like that while you're listening. There's so many creative ways that you can add a little bit of fun to your day. Sounds on your computer. You know how you always get those sounds when it's there's an appointment that comes up or you get sent an email or something like that?
Yeah.
You can record a sound and replace that. And what better thing to do than to record a laugh or a whoopee? Or you get an appointment, whoopee! Get an email, yay! Have a bit of fun with it. Get creative. My cell phone, the ring on it, I had my son speak into my phone, and I recorded him, and it says, "This is my mom's phone ringing, ring, 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 ring."
Oh, that is terrific.
And I laugh
totally
every time I hear it. I love it.
You know what mine plays? Mine plays the Addams Family.
Oh, ding, ding, ding.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. I tell you, I like celebrations, too. Like, I went through a stage of creating, and celebrations isn't the word I want, but like an event, a graduation, an actual event, and creating those. I graduated from parenthood when my daughter turned 21, and my sister and a friend and I were in the mountains for a workshop, and we had the graduation gown and pomp and circumstance and the whole bit, and I literally had written a decree of releasing my children, letting them go into their adulthood. And we did the whole thing. We did it upright.
That's brilliant.
It was wonderful. It really was. And the other one that I've done that has worked for me is releasing balloons. Have you done any of those where you release your problems as balloons?
No, but that's another creative idea. That's like the down pin flip where you're getting rid of the dump.
Right.
And that's a brilliant thing to do because, again, you're taking whatever it is, you're acknowledging it, so you're not pretending it doesn't exist, and then
and you turn it loose. You drop it down in the balloon and fill them with helium and turn them loose. But, yeah, it works. Of course, now the airplanes, you know, the airports prefer that you not do that anymore.
Yes.
But that's a whole different issue. But a few years ago, we did that without any problems.
Oh, now, wouldn't that be fun to do a rubber ducky race that way?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It's hysterical.
That would be. That would be awesome.
And we don't do enough of those things anymore. You know, we don't celebrate enough.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do those.
A dream duck.
Excuse me?
Dream ducks. Put your dreams on them and send them in the water.
Ooh. And let them go where they will.
Now, wouldn't that be fun? That is a fun idea.
Mm-hmm. Release them.
Yep.
Love it. Love it, love
it. You know, another thing I think is very powerful is the mirror exercises where you tell yourself that you love yourself or I love you into the mirror.
Yeah.
And I had the opportunity to see a movie that was based on Napoleon Hill. It was called A Millionaire Awaken Your Secret. Now, that's a movie that may, you know, really hit the big time at some point, but I think it's in revision right now, and Martin Dunkerton is the filmmaker of that movie. And he was completely homeless, and he implemented the 13 Napoleon Hill, principles. And from the beginning to the end of the movie, he made a few million dollars and got himself out of his problems, or his challenges. Let's use that word. But the thing is, one of the things he really did he did it every day, and he really, really worked at it was the mirror exercise. And I never forgot that about that movie, where he really, really talked to himself. He not only said, I love you, and then did something else. He really concentrated on it, and he would weep and cry, and it was just one of the most amazing parts of that movie I've ever seen.
That's Louise Hay, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're in the mirror.
Yeah.
Louise Hay does a lot of that.
Yeah. And I think it's very powerful.
Yeah, it is. I have done a lot of that, too.
Well, taken some personal tweaks on that as well. For myself, what I would usually do is in the shower, when you're soaping up, I would say I love you to every part of my body while I was soaping up.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
because
love that.
Because, well, I mean, how often? And I have to tell you, when I first started doing that, I was very uncomfortable. It was It was an uncomfortable thing for me to say I love you to myself. And it was uncomfortable just to say it, let alone to genuinely mean it.
Right.
So I started I started with that. I started with the I love yous. And when I got comfortable enough with saying the I love yous, I added another twist on that, and that was I love you and I forgive you.
Oh, that's big.
And that was very uncomfortable at the beginning. And but it was necessary, because there's been so many things that we all go through in our lives that we blame ourselves for. This didn't work, so it must be something's wrong with me. I didn't do this right, that kind of thing. And we all have those things that we have not chosen to forgive ourselves for.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh,
so
yeah,
that's why I brought that into my morning ritual. And eventually I felt really good doing it. And when I felt good doing it, I just went back to I love you.
Right. And it's very, what's the word for that, Kate? That, I can't say the word.
Ho'oponopono?
Yeah.
Ho'oponopono.
Yeah.
I love you.
I forgive you. Thank you. Yes.
Yes.
I was thinking, too, when you're talking about the body stuff, and when I get sick, the first thing I do is start singing, even if it's a bad cold, to the tune of Shortening Bread. Have you done that one? Are y'all too young to know the song Shortening Bread?
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay. And you sing, every little cell in my body is happy.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
It's really cool. Yeah. And it fits. And you just keep repeating it, you know. But it works.
Well, it reminds me of shifting out of the blame syndrome to the responsibility part of it. I mean, instead of saying I blame myself for being such a schmuck, you just say, I'm going to take responsibility for my life.
Well, and it's a very important distinction between the two. There is a clear difference between responsibility and blame. Responsibility means that, you know, I accept that I had a part in what I'm experiencing. The thing that most people forget is that we all do the best we can with what we have in those moments.
Right.
And
right.
That is the truth. That is the complete truth. And if you can remember that for other people as well as yourself, you're going to have a lot smoother ride through life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it got to the point where, you know how when you're driving down the road and
mm-hmm.
somebody cuts you off and you get really ticked off and it ruins your day?
Yep.
I started making some shifts in my choices with respect to things like that. So when that happened, of course, you never know why that person cut you off.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody might have done it to them and they're having a bad day, so they're sharing, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a possibility. They might be rushing to the hospital because someone that they know might be in there.
Right.
They might have been having a fight with their teen child and they don't know what they're doing. The teen child ran away from home. Like, we really don't know what their reason is. So I would make up something, or I would simply say, whatever it is that's going on for you, I hope you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that, just so that I could feel okay about the experience.
Exactly. Especially, here, there's another situation with somebody having an accident, and, the whole highway is filled up with stopped cars. Instead of getting upset about that, sending silent blessings to that poor person who's had the accident has very powerful effects. Apparently, a psychic I had read somewhere where a psychic, actually, the person who was in the car crash was, you know, had a near-death experience, and as she was leaving her car, you know, the out-of-body thing that happens when people are in that state of in and out, saw that somebody behind her was praying for her or sending her good vibrations, and she picked that up. She saw the energy of that prayer so vividly, and she took it in, and it helped her get back to her body again. And,
wow.
I just remembered that at this moment. So that those feelings of those thoughts of goodwill have tremendous energy. Tremendous.
Never wasted. It's never wasted.
Mm-hmm. And it's so healing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the bad thoughts, or you know, the very negative thoughts, probably, well, they don't have any power, but they can be very, very weighty. You know, they can be very just not good for the world.
Well,
so, yeah.
And the other thing is that those are those moments when we take responsibility for our experience. I get to choose, do I get PO'd at you for cutting me off?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or do I send you some love so that your day gets better too? I mean, it's my choice. I'm choosing how I'm feeling. I'm either going to go, hey, you know, something must be up for you, I hope things get better, or I'm really ticked off at you.
Yeah.
I get to choose which one.
Yeah, in the workplace itself, where I still am, I believe that the more I learn to do exactly what we're talking about, the sooner I'll be able to get out of there. You know, in terms of leaving with everything being in good, you know, in goodwill. As long as I can learn to allow people to be who they are, and as you say, that, you know, they're doing the best that they can.
Mm-hmm.
That is the most beautiful thing you can, a very beautiful gift. It's almost like a mantra, really.
It is. If you can remember that, if you can do something to trigger that thought whenever something goes on, they're doing the best they can with what they have. I'm doing the best I can with what
I have. Yeah.
We are doing the best we can with what we have. That
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. But see, that comes back to, and I believe I do have one of the sections in there that speaks directly to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I've experienced myself. I was in a job that I considered soul-sucking. And then
mm-hmm.
yeah.
I felt guilty about that because it was actually a good job.
Yeah.
How can you feel that way? I mean, it was a great company. They did a lot of charity work. It was a very awesome company. But I was not where I belonged. I was taking up somebody else's job somebody else would have loved.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, that's a beautiful way to think about
mm-hmm.
it.
I was not
yeah.
where I belonged, and I was not happy, and I felt like I was, you know, trapped in there because, of course, you got your bills and all that kind of stuff to take care of. And what came through for me in that moment, because I was journaling at that point because I'd already got through my crisis, right? So I'd brought in my journal and I was using it on an ongoing basis. And I was journaling, and the thought that came through was this: in order to leave where you are at, you need to love where you are at. And I knew it wasn't me that thought of it because I thought it was the stupidest thing I'd ever heard. Because I hated my dog.
Right, right.
That's stupid. How can I love it? I hate it. So in order, because I knew it wasn't me, and that was a gift from divine, I sat and I played with it and I processed the information I was given. And it was like, okay, I can't change the tasks. They are what they are. I can't change
mm-hmm.
the people I work with or work for. They are what they are.
Mm-hmm.
What do I have control over? What can I find in my job to love? And what I came up with is my workspace. That was
mm-hmm.
the only thing that I had a certain amount of control over. So I ended up bringing in a little clock radio CD player, I brought in music that I would really enjoy listening to, and it was easy to listen to at a low level. You can't do, you know, like the heavy-duty, crunchy rock and roll you want to crank up. That'd be a problem. So just, you know, some soft music that I could have playing lowly and quietly in the background. I created an altar on my desk, and all it was this little blue plate that I bought at the dollar store, and I put things on there that represented my joys. I had a picture of me and my son when he was 10 months old. It's my favorite picture ever. And I had a little dolphin figurine that I picked up at the dollar store because it represented Hawaii to me. I had a little tin of sea salt with an Om symbol on it. I put a couple of my favorite crystal stones on there and a few shiny pennies. And that was my altar. And when I look at that, I would smile because they were all things that I loved. And I put up pictures of Hawaii on either side of my computer monitor. I was a legal assistant. So I put pictures up of Hawaii on either side of my monitor, and I heard somewhere that orange and yellows were very happy, productive colors. So I put those color of pictures of Hawaii on either sides of my monitor. And so I found a way for me to really enjoy my space at the job.
Yeah.
I genuinely enjoyed my space at the job. And that was in January of 2006. I also set the intention that I wanted to go part-time at my job because I couldn't believe that I could go full-time on with my business. So I bridged my way. I said, okay, part-time. By the end of February, it was established, and when I put a date on it, I said March 1st, 2006. Mm-hmm. By the end of February, it was established that I would be going part-time at my job on April 1st in a way that had never happened at that company before.
Oh, great.
And it was wild the way it happened. So I was like, okay, well, that worked.
Yeah.
So I put it out there that I would be in my business full-time by June 1st, 2006. And I said, well, if it worked the other way, then maybe it would work for going full-time, right? And I couldn't see how to do that. Because as far as I could see, in my limited perspective, I would have had to have attracted a lot of clients in a very short 1 week to 2 week span in order that I could give the proper notice to the company. So, and I didn't see that happening. So what I did is, and this is a really important detail, I didn't have to believe that I could do it. The only thing that I did was I let go of not believing.
Ah.
And that was, you know, and I only just noticed that specific detail not that long ago, and I put an article up at my blog, VelmaGallant.com, and it's called The Space Between the Beliefs. But that's what happened was I let go of the not believing and just went about enjoying my space and enjoying my life. And I did end up leaving my job and going into my business full-time on July 14th, 2006. So 45 days after I set the date I set for my intention. You will not find me complaining that it was 45 days late.
Do you always set a date?
No, I don't. I do sometimes, and other times I don't. What was interesting is in that where I created that intention, I actually got about three or four other intentions that I had in my journal that I didn't set dates on. So the universe decided to bundle them up into one shot for me, and that was just great.
Yes.
So, yes, sometimes I do set dates. Other times I don't. And the other really cool thing is even if you do set a date and it doesn't happen, ask that you find out why. Because I have found that some intentions that I set are contra to other intentions that I have set.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And an example is I really wanted to go to Zero Limits 3.
Yeah.
Joe Vitale. I really wanted to go. I put it up on my vision wall, and I pictured giving him hugs and all that kind of stuff because I'm a huggy girl and I do that. And I did all of the things that I know to do, and I loved it, and I enjoyed it, and I let it go. And then it didn't happen. But what I found out was, is that was the same weekend that I ended up competing in the next level of the Toastmasters competition.
Yeah.
So that's why it didn't show up. It didn't show up because I did something wrong, or I didn't visualize hard enough, or I didn't want it bad enough, or I didn't believe enough. I want to do more public speaking. I wanted to compete in a Toastmasters competition. So I had two conflicting desires. But this one was stronger. This one served my purpose more. So that's the one that ended up showing up. So sometimes when we don't get what we want, oftentimes it's because there's either something better on the horizon or there's something that's more important to us.
Right.
So
right.
If you turn it into a game and you have a little bit more fun with it, you plurk with it, then you're going to find things are going to be just a heck of a lot better. Because even when you don't get what you think you want, it don't hurt.
Well, it's the this or something better. I mean, I was taught you always ask for this or something better.
Absolutely.
Because we don't know. We do not know.
See, because, for example, when you asked about dates, I had actually set that vision of leaving my job back in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it 3 years later.
Mm-hmm.
I never set a date on it with that one. Because I was too scared to.
You wish you had?
No.
Okay.
Nope. It was a loving thing to do for myself. I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I was not in a place at that point to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a very loving thing to do. But my coach brought me through the vision. You know, I was walking down the hallway, grinning from ear to ear, and my coworkers were excited for me that I was going to be able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could see myself, and I could feel the excitement and all of that kind of stuff and just bubbling over with being able to share what was going on. And I didn't go into that vision very often back then because it was scary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it didn't happen then. However, everything that occurred between that point and when it finally did happen, supported me in being able to allow that to happen.
Yeah, it's a process, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Sometimes it goes fast, and other times it takes a little bit of time, but, you know, it really doesn't matter. It's all perfect.
Exactly. I think the workplace has a certain mentality, and we've all... maybe a lot of us have been raised to believe that that's the only way to make it, you know, in the society. But once you start changing your beliefs about that, things move a little faster. You know, getting out of the workplace is a real process.
Mm-hmm.
Or it sounds like it was a real process for you. It was a spiritual event, it sounds
absolutely
like.
Absolutely. Well, and there's a few things to play with that, because a lot of us have been raised that that's the responsible thing to do.
It
would be irresponsible to give up your job and follow your dreams. Because a lot of I would bet that if you went back in your ancestry, there was a lot of your ancestry that said, "I can't have what I want because it's irresponsible."
Mm-hmm.
And what I invite you to play with is
work.
Be responsible to your spirit.
Ah. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think, too,
honor the belief about responsibility when you are responsible to your spirit?
I think one of the reasons I had to stay in the light in the workforce for so long was that there were people that needed me.
Mm.
And in certain jobs, and I do clerical work, so I was in and out of jobs all the time, could always walk away and find a better one, you know. But as soon as I had met whatever need there was, then it was like I'd be released and another door would open. It was like I'd get tired of it, I'd start looking, and all of a sudden there'd be another job. But if I looked back, I could see that person, that one person that needed me to be there for those moments.
Mm-hmm.
That's a beautiful perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
so
you're taking responsibility for how you feel about these things.
Right.
Well, there's just something about that, what you just said about being responsible to your spirit triggered something in my mind. There's just something about that that I will tell you, as time goes on, I'll let you know how it all works out, you know, how it all comes out in the wash as it is. I don't know. There's just something about that that triggered something in my mind that, it's really beautiful, and I appreciate that perspective. Thank you.
Hey, well, I mean, we all play in these things in one way or another.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of us, I mean, we end up with a lot of conflicting beliefs, and if you can find a way to support yourself to move through things, then that's great. I always play with stuff like this in my journal. You know, what would it take to?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to do I want to release the belief about responsibility? I don't know that I want to.
Right.
Maybe for some it would serve. But I don't know that I want to release the belief about responsibility. However, maybe there's ways I can shift it. And that is one way that I have played with is I am being responsible to my spirit by following my dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but I don't think a lot of people can get to that point of being responsible to their spirit until they can say, I love you in the mirror.
Oh, I agree.
We're going to need to release our version of what responsibility. It's like the whole false guilt thing. Sometimes we take on false responsibility. So we release the false responsibility, I think.
That's right. Start telling yourself the truth.
Yes.
Well, the weirdest thing just happened. We only have 50 seconds left in the program. as Joan says, this is the fastest hour in the week.
Absolutely.
It is that.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's been a wonderful time talking with you, Velma, and we really appreciate it. Do you have a takeaway message for us?
Well, first of all, I had a ton of fun, and I'm honored that you asked me. And a takeaway, honestly, I think it really does come back to loving yourself and loving your spirit.
Honoring your spirit and being responsible to your spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very powerful. Very, very powerful. Well, and I want to say that this program this evening will go on to iTunes. We have a subscription there. It will go all over the Internet because it just does. I just make sure it does. And I also want to thank Klaus Jensen and Henrique Abu let's see here, his partner. You know, it's Klaus Jensen's partner, Henrik Berg Abu, for the beautiful music that we play on this program called the Fairy Ring. It's not the Fairy Ring, but it's the Fairy Music. The Fairy Ring is also very beautiful. Has anybody heard that? That is really cool.
His
music can be found on www.musicformotherandchild.com, and everybody can purchase it there. It's just really beautiful music. So thank you very much, Velma, Joan, everybody. Chef Keen, aloha to you, and Laverne, and dear Tam and her beautiful dog, the Punk, Louis the Punk. And we love you all. We think this has been great. So I'm just going to play this music. Love you all.
Thank you. Good night, all.
Thank you.
Good night.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you.